The quality of care for your child over the course of like their day matters way more than the quantity of hours spent with this person or that person. I just want to really drive home that like the simple answer of hours with parent is not automatically better than hours with adult who is able to give them a high quality of care.
That's a great point.
I think a lot of people derive a lot of guilt from oversimplifying, like they should be with me.
Josie started school this week. She turned 3 this week.
Yeah, she did.
Which I know is going to date the podcast. I don't know when this is coming out. But
good thing you guys care so much.
I know. No, you're like, but wait. How could that be?
This wasn't today.
Yeah, exactly. She started school a little like hiccup. I can't remember if I told you this. We hyped her up to start school on her birthday because we were told that she could. And then there was a miscommunication with the school. Shoot. And they were like, oh, we're actually missing a paper. But we didn't know about this. So it was just sort of like, yeah. Anyway, they were like, we were going to tell you on this day, but Wilson was sick. So we didn't go that day. Uh-huh. Yeah. It was a whole thing. And the bummer is, you guys know, like you're getting your kid ready to start school for the very first time in their life. Mm-hmm. It does feel important that on the day they actually get to go.
Right.
But she was great. She was like, oh, well, I guess I'm going to skate park with dad, you know, and like it worked out. Then really happy. They told us it was going to be like another week, and then surprise, they were wrong, and it was great. And she was able to start 2 days later.
Okay.
And so that was yesterday. And she's in Wilson's little class, and it's a very small class. And she was super excited to go. So far has loved it. It's only been one day.
Okay.
And I know based on experience with Wilson and experience with you is that like it would be normal for her to love it for the first few days and then be like, all right, I did it.
Yeah.
I'm all done. So I am wondering if that will come. The only reason why I'm thinking it's possible it won't be as bad as Wilson's is because she has Wilson there and they like really both like it. And now Wilson, who sometimes is nervous about going to school and will be like, I don't want to go, or, you know, protest in some way. So far, he loves the idea that they get to go together and they'll be talking about like the things they're going to do.
Okay.
And so I hope that this is, I don't know, overall like a more peaceful thing. And we dropped the pacifier this week. Whoa. So many big things. Yeah. Which I was very nervous about too, even though I knew it was the right thing. But it's like another emotional thing of like, oh my gosh, they're getting bigger and they're so attached to this. And like she's had it since she was born, but she did great. And I'll like make videos of how we did it because we like tried one way and it didn't work. So then we tried another way and it did work. And it just feels like a big week.
Yeah.
Lots of changes.
That is a big week. I'm so excited that it's going like well with Wilson, because that was one of the things we had talked about for him of like maybe fingers crossed if he can hang in there for a few weeks, even while he's feeling nervous.
Yeah.
Perhaps when Jules arrives also, it will be like a piece of home will come to him. He will maybe feel like, you know, like take on his role in their relationship a little bit more rather than just having to be like, I'm so little out here by myself.
Yes. Yeah. Now he gets to be kind of the big guy.
Yeah.
We were like, Julesy, did you make any friends? I know the advice is like, when your kid goes to school, don't ask them a ton of questions. But we were, of course, like, what did you eat?
Yeah.
I don't know about that. She laughed. Like, obviously, if she was like, I don't want to tell you, it'd be like, all right, let's just breathe. Uh-huh. But no, she was funny. But she's like, I did make friends. I made friends with the little one and the other one and the big one. Well, the reason I thought it was so funny.
That's so cute. That's so cute.
So, yeah. And she woke up this morning excited to go to school. She's like, I got to get dressed. She started grabbing her clothes. I'm like, okay, cool. This is great.
Yeah. Okay.
So far, so good. Day two.
Great.
Day two,
done. We'll take 2 great days.
Exactly.
Over the alternative.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's good.
Amazing. Which kind of is the perfect intro. Oh, should I welcome them?
Now's the time.
Guys, welcome. My name is Jessica Hover.
I'm Lane Dealing Sherland, and this is Very Good Enough, a podcast from Very Good Mothers Club.
And today we're going to talk about kind of childcare, preschool, all things. We've just gotten a variety of questions on this topic.
Yep.
And so I think we're going to answer some questions, but also just offer some of our ideas on them. Mm-hmm. And again, it's one of those where like, we would love to hear from you.
Absolutely.
So if you want to DM us or you want to join our community online and correspond with other moms who are kind of sorting this out for themselves, this is very much something that looks different depending on your family's circumstances and even your location. We're here in Los Angeles.
Yep.
We see things this one way, but I mean, Sean's from the Midwest, mm-hmm. from Michigan, and I know what his family is experiencing. It's just different from what's here.
Very
and
different.
So, yeah, would love to know what you guys go through.
Absolutely. And my hope for this episode is mostly just that it will help to kind of streamline some options and some ways of thinking about this. There's not going to be an answer that we could generate that would work for probably any of you, much less all. But if we can just pare down a little bit of you don't really have to worry about that part, or this is kind of these are the ranges of things to think about in that space, and then don't worry about the rest of it. Hopefully you'll be able to be okay, which of these things applies to me? And it'll just kind of narrow down some of the chaotic peripheral noise.
Yeah. And ease some of the overwhelm. I feel like it's very overwhelming to figure out.
Yeah.
Where do we send our children? Mm-hmm. School, just as a topic, is very complex, tricky.
Very complex.
We want to help encourage you, and we want you to walk away from this conversation feeling okay, cool, I can do this.
Yeah.
And whatever you end up doing will be the right thing for you and your family, mm-hmm. because we know that you know best for them. Cool.
Yep.
You want to start us?
I want you to start us because you walked into my home today in this beautiful green, solid colored
thing.
But you walked in carrying this red book that's also solid, and I just felt like the color blocking was so perfect.
I'll hold it up for those of you who are watching. This book actually doesn't have much to do with childcare as a whole. It's called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. It's the story of success. It's just very interesting. But I walked in. Do you want me to share what I said, or does that come later?
I think we should start here. Whatever came out of this book and out of your conversation with Becca, let's begin there. And maybe we'll just start with sort of the complexity of the whole deal.
Yes.
And everyone will be like, yes, it does feel that complex. Okay. And then we'll settle into some other stuff.
Okay, sounds good. So we started at Jules in preschool, right? And yesterday, my friend Becca, who owns Very Good Mothers Club with me and is staying with us right now, she's reading this book. So she told me about what's in this book, and then I was rereading it this morning. Mm-hmm. But basically, inside of this book, they were talking about this study that was done on families. It was a certain number of families. I'm going to be really vague. You can get the book if you want to reread it. But the idea was cool. It was just basically they studied all of these families, higher income families, lower income families, and how they did things with their children. And one of the main conclusions they saw was that there was a very definitive split between the two groups of higher income kids versus lower income kids. And what they found was that the families that had higher income, those kids spoke up for themselves more. They advocated for themselves, whereas the lower income children did not.
In the school setting?
In life.
Oh, okay.
In general. And it came down to this. So it basically was that the higher income families, those parents spent more time with their children and were shuttling them around places. They put them in a lot of sports. They put them in a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't actually the activities that was the big point. The point was the parents seemed to train their children to understand that their voice has an impact. One example they used was a mom taking her kid to the doctor's appointment, and the mom of the higher income family said, "So what questions do you have for your doctor?" And then when they got there, the mom said, my son, I think it was my son, has some questions for you, doctor. Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead and ask your questions. Okay. Contrast that, the lower income families had less time to be with their children, which makes sense. So then they trusted the childcare system, the school systems, to train up their children. And in those settings, kids are taught to be quiet and to be listening to the person in charge, and that they are not the person in charge.
Yeah.
And so what they saw was in parent-teacher meetings, the child with the the more money, those kids were actually encouraged to talk to the teacher themselves. So those parents would be like, "Do you need to talk to your teacher about anything? You said that there was something wrong with your grade. Why don't you ask them about that?" Whereas the lower income families, they didn't do that. They didn't teach their kids that. Interestingly, the lower income families, those kids were quite creative because they weren't in all of these sports and things. So they were making up their own games with their siblings, or those kids tended to be less whiny. And so it's not like one was better than the other, but this strong kind of conclusive piece that Becca and I were talking about is how important it is for children to understand that their voice matters and that they can use it to change an outcome and affect an outcome.
Yeah.
And the way I took it, because right now Sean and I are in a season where like we really need our kids to be in school. We need it because we need the income that comes from two parents working. And so it's good for me to understand that while my kids are going to be away for a big chunk of the day with people other than us now, we still want to instill a value in them that while you be respectful to the people teaching you, you also have a voice that matters. And if something isn't as you feel it should be inside of yourself, you then respectfully use your voice to, you know, talk about it. And I don't know, Becca and I just thought that was interesting. So then when you this morning were talking about how we should go here on this topic of childcare and should someone else watch our kids, should we watch our kids, all of it, I think, at least in my experience, and I interact with a lot of you, a lot of you are in all kinds of situations where some of you really need childcare and some of you don't want childcare, but you have to do it. If we can just go about it more of a way of like, okay, no matter what our circumstance is, what do these kids need in their lives? So if they need social time, right? Then if we are going to go the route of keeping our kids home with us all the time and we're the primary caregiver and they're not going to be going to school or preschool, then it would make sense that we would prioritize social opportunities for our children to go be around other children, right? And then if we need our kids to be in preschool and they need to go do that with someone other than us, then it makes sense we would prioritize some parent-child time, some, I don't know, you talked about reading with your kids, like some things that are bonding and help lift them up. And it's not just trusting someone out there to do that for them. Yeah, that makes sense.
It makes so much sense. And I think, I think it's the perfect example because what it shows is first, it's incredibly challenging to measure scientifically what the outcomes are for children based on like yes daycare or no daycare, because there are so many factors involved in how a child's outcome, what a child's outcome is, that you can't actually like hold anything constant. So when we see studies, you know, when the news does a thing of like new studies show that blah 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 blah, but it's just like one tiny piece of data with so many variables because it's people. But then second, like I love that this shows that there are benefits to each different kind of space that a child could be. And there are some weaknesses in each of those spaces. So whatever you end up choosing or just needing to do because it's what you need to do, no problem. You just notice what the strength point is for that and what the weak point is for that. And then you provide a little bit of extra support around the weak point and you're good to go. Like it's really okay.
You reminded me, there was something they said about, there's one of the families they studied, that was in the lower income bracket, but one of the kids started doing activities. I think she like was in choir or something. But she had signed herself up for that because the parents said, we are not able to do this for you, but you are able to do this for you. Here's how you do it. And so they also like made that a point to be like, if you're, I don't, this is me again, like paraphrasing what I, but basically the idea is like, do the best with what you have. So this parent didn't have the capacity at that point to get this child signed up for certain things, but taught the child, you can do this, what's available at your school that you can sign yourself up for. And that also was cool to me is like, oh yeah, these kids, like as they get older, they'll be able to do certain things too if we just teach them what they're able to go do, you know?
Absolutely. So my entry point into this question today was that one of my super absolutely dearest friends in the whole wide world is super pregnant with her first baby. And I'm so excited about it. I could lose my mind. And she texted me a little bit ago just asking if I had any resources about like what is better for a child, to be at home with a parent or to be in childcare. And it's very difficult for the reason that I just described to hand out resources about that, because I have read a lot about this and I've sat through a lot of articles and talks about like the data, quote unquote, about this kind of stuff. And every researcher who's like reporting on this stuff, or every person who's collecting or trying to like paraphrase all the data to give it to parents, is like, okay, listen, I'm going to tell you these numbers, but what you need to know about the numbers is that they don't represent this, or it's really different based on the age of the child. This study didn't take into consideration this thing. And there's a lot of like couching around it. But as readers, and especially as parents making these like high stakes choices, it's very hard for us to hold that part and then go look at numbers. So like we just weight the numbers as way more valuable than all of that description of like how to think about it. Yeah. So I too, even as I went to go look for articles, was like, I don't want to just hand this article over to a new mom, though this person is totally capable of like thinking her way through it. I felt like, dang, I really haven't found anything that I would want. I have a whole stack of things that I could give you, like too much stuff to read.
Sure.
And then hopefully that would balance itself all the way out. But there's just this feeling of like, ah, I don't know. It's nervous. So yeah. I just want to give you guys the too long didn't read of this, which is the quality of care for your child over the course of like their day matters way more than the quantity of hours spent with this person or that person.
Okay.
So children want to feel a level of consistency in the quality of care that they're giving. So for example, if you are able to send your child to a preschool where you feel really confident about the adults they're with, they're getting adequate attention, it's feeling pretty good there, it's like a low stress space for them, they feel safe, and they're there all day long at a place that's like a high quality childcare center. And you choose that because what you need as a person is a stable income in your family, and you're someone who derives a lot of self-esteem from doing a good job at your job, and you come home in the day feeling full and feeling like there's not financial stress in your family. You got the appropriate amount of like affirmation as a person for doing a good job. You pick your child up from this quality childcare center, and then you spend the evening with them and have a great time together. That is a consistently high quality level of care that your child has picked all day, even if six or seven of those hours were at a care center. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you are a mom who's in a space where you have to stay home and you hate it and it makes you depressed and sad and empty and you're frustrated because it's just you and this child and you feel like you can't meet their needs and you feel guilty and no one ever says thank you to you for this incredible amount of work, and it causes you this agitated thing and you do your best, but you can feel like we're in a tense relationship, me and this kid all day, even though I'm doing my best and I'm not well, just because they spent 100% of their hours with you, that actually could be a lower quality of care because you're not getting what you need. And like your family system could really use support in this area. A child with a mother who is experiencing a lot of depression experiences lower outcomes than a child who goes to daycare all day, even though some data may show that children who spend a lot of hours in daycare across a huge swatch of children have like slightly lower outcomes in this area.
Okay.
The individual child spending a ton of hours there may have better outcomes than the child who spends all day with a mother who's deeply depressed.
Right.
Right. So like there are huge important variables here. And your goal, I just want to really drive home that like the simple answer of hours with parent is not automatically better than hours with adult who is able to give them a high quality of care.
That's a great point.
And I think a lot of people derive a lot of guilt from oversimplifying, like they should be with me.
Mm.
And I understand why it would feel that way. And there may really be like a biological reason for having that feeling. But I just, I want this to be like hopeful for you. If you're a person who is like, has that particular kind of guilt. I think that's one of the big things. I think it's one of the big pressures on especially new moms to be like, from grandparent, from society, from other stay-at-home moms, to be like, well, are you going to be able to get to be home with him? Is he going to get to have you all day? These things that like automatically imply that that's the best thing. It's not automatically the best thing. It might be. And in a lot of circumstances, it totally is. But there's, I want to make sure that the equation stays around like what's the most consistent quality of care this child can be receiving throughout their day and night over like who's the best person for them to be with all the time.
One of the things I love about what you're saying And I think it's so sweet of your friend who's pregnant. Like, I relate to her so much. What you're saying is this is very human. Mm-hmm. This is very human. Mm-hmm. Like, what is the actual human stuff going on in your house? Is it tough to pay the bills? Do you need two incomes? Like, mom, are you really sad? Are you really struggling? Like, I remember I was full-time caregiver for Eloise in Barcelona for a time. I was so depressed. And it's not that she was making me depressed. I was just really struggling. Mm-hmm. And when I ended up going, and we've talked about the story about going and getting doing the inpatient program or the outpatient program. Anyway, basically, when I started talking to professionals, one of the main things they said initially was like, what outside help can you get with Eloise?
Yeah.
And I did feel bad until we found this amazing preschool and the teacher, Silvia, she's still our friend, Silvia, she not only loved Eloise so well, it gave Eloise more confidence. She had little friends. She, like, this woman was just such a good lover.
Yeah.
But also, I could go in with my teary eyes and my story of, like, I moved here from another country. Like, this is hard. And then she would say, like, oh, so did all these moms. Like, so did all these parents, dads, too. Mm-hmm. She'd hug me. Eloise had a great time. I suddenly had a certain chunk of the day where I wasn't taking care of her. And by the end of it, I felt no guilt. I felt like this was the right move for our family. Amazing. Thank God people saw this as a solution that was appropriate. Thank goodness Sean was like, yeah, we got to do this. This is worth it. But what I think we do sometimes, especially when we haven't had our kids yet, is like, what's the equation we need to solve to make sure that our child grows up to be the right child? Like, so is the equation childcare or, it's staying home all day plus this that equals healthy, emotionally stable adult, you know?
Yeah. And why wouldn't you? Like, why wouldn't you be trying to figure that out? You just want to do it right.
Yeah. You want the recipe that bakes the cookies that gives you chocolate chip versus something else, right?
Totally.
And I love that you can do that in the way of like gather outside wisdom, but then bring it right inside your home. Mm-hmm. And then even further, bring it right inside your gut and go, what is right for us? Mm-hmm. And give yourself the grace to be like, we're going to try this. And if it doesn't work, we're going to change this. Mm-hmm. How awesome versus I have to get it right. If I don't get it right, this is going to cost us all a lot. This is a huge deal.
Yeah.
I know that it feels like that. I'm like the queen of making something too big in my mind.
Yeah.
But if you can bring it back to the thing we say a lot is like, try something. If it works, let it work. When it stops working, change it.
Yeah.
That's allowed. That's great. Mm-hmm. So for me, this is really, I mean, the fact that my two youngest are in a preschool, and even as you're talking, I'm like going through like, would I describe it as quality care? I sure hope so. There are definitely some questions.
We'll talk about that in just a minute. We're going to like really define that term.
But it is like for me as just mom Jessica with the kids in the preschool right now, it's definitely like, I don't know if insecurity is the right word, but it's like, it's nerve wracking. That's a better, you just feel unsettled. And Sean feels it too of like, I wish you could just know that this was the right decision. Yeah. But sometimes going with your gut is like, this is the best option we see. Uh-huh. And we're going to really hope it's a good one.
Yeah.
And then we are going to give ourselves permission to change it if we need to. But like, it's sometimes you find a place like the one in Spain. I was so settled. Mm. She was a love. It would be like sending my kids to your preschool. Yeah. I would feel like that. This one, I have reason to believe it's good, but I definitely don't have the certainty that I felt about that other one.
So I will say even people who sent their kids, like handed them to me feeling like we love Miss Lane. This is our second child that we're giving to Miss Lane. Still walk away with that feeling of vulnerability because your child is somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Like they're not, you can't be around them with your arms around them, which is one of the only things that ever makes you feel stable, right? Yeah. They just are. Part of that is inherent in the fact that they're people who aren't you. And that's
and you so can't crazy. See them. You can't see them, which if you think of like mammals, like a big bear, you never get between a bear and their cub. The mom's going to freak out. Yeah. Lions. Are they mammals?
Lions are mammals.
Yeah. Okay, good. Absolutely. I'm saying the science thing and I'm like,
just stay out of the water and out of the air.
Thank you.
And no lizards.
you make everything so simple.
Well, I'm a preschool teacher.
Yeah, I appreciate it. But even that, like if you watch any sort of nature show, you never want anything between the mom and the baby. Mm-hmm. It feels very unnatural.
Yeah.
And then we're the human mammal ones who sometimes do that. Mm-hmm. And it feels weird. Right. I remember thinking like, so do I put a tracker on my kids? Like, do I put like a secret camera on their watch? And Sean did say that was creepy, but I was like, this is the first time that I'm sending them away and I don't know everything going on 24/7. It's weird.
Yeah. There's an inherent vulnerability in that.
Yeah.
And having that feeling doesn't necessarily mean that you're making the wrong choice.
Right. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Do you want to go into quality care?
I do. And let me also just give some of the different benefits of different options.
Yeah, I like
that. So that you can be like, oh, that one resonates nicely inside of me. I want to try for that kind of a thing. So some of the benefits of keeping your child at home is that it is the absolutely lowest stress option for the child.
Okay.
Like in terms of measuring like flare-ups of stress in the brain or like stress hormone-y things. Like staying at home, there's no point where that there's this big moment of cortisol stress because they have to go do this now different, interesting thing. So there's if like that's the thing that feels really valuable to you, that's going to be low stress. If you have a child who is highly reactive or highly sensitive or has sensory processing issues, sometimes those children can be like very easily stressed by a lot of stuff. And so if you're finding like, oh, there's a need for this child while they're really little and their brain is developing and trying to work on this impulse control or processing environment is challenging for them, you may want to lean into more of the space that like they stay lower stress based on their environment. Perhaps that's best.
Okay.
If you love it,
and
it makes you so happy, happy mom is the happiest thing for a child.
Right.
Happy dad is the happiest thing for a child. Amazing.
Yeah.
If you're like a person who's like, I love everything people say about teaching preschool, but I only want to do it for my children. Amazing. That's probably going to be phenomenal for you guys. If you're someone who has a super ton of community support already, and it's really easy for you to get a lot of social interactions for your kids with other kids, and you get a lot of social interaction with parents, and there are people in your life already, or you have a community that has a lot of people who have already had kids or are ahead of you in a way that you can draw support and resources, great. Maybe that's going to be the perfect circumstance for you guys. And it's financially tenable for your family.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Financial stress is a huge stress on the whole family, which includes your children.
Yeah.
So if there's this idea that mom staying at home is like this traditional, ideal, perfect thing for the kid, but it's going to cause us financial stress, I just want to let you know the financial stress does really weigh against that. Mm-hmm. So if that's like big, right? For a lot of people, there's like a, we feel like this is the best thing for kids. And we're going to like really cause a lot of these other challenges. In our family life in order to achieve this thing. I want to just like alleviate a little bit of that pressure. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily like, oh, my kid notches down in life if what we need to do in order to get more money flowing into our family is have someone else help us with childcare.
Yeah.
That's not the case.
Right.
So preschool, now we've got stay at home with mom. We've got be with a known adult in our family or in our family or like a friend or like an adult who the children
feels
knows.
Like a relative maybe.
There's have a nanny in the home.
Right.
There's what they call in-home carers. That's like a home daycare where like it's that person's home.
So you bring the kid
to
that.
Your child to that home. Then there's daycare, which is outside. That's going to be an actual center somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then there's preschool, which has an academic quality to it. In terms of licensing, preschools and daycares receive the same license.
Oh,
it's totally dependent on, there's nothing inherently more academic about a preschool necessarily.
Okay.
So if that's something that you're really wanting, you need to, we need to do some investigating in the specific center to find out like, oh, is there actually like specific learning happening here? Or is this just focused on childcare? None of these things are inherently better than others. There's going to be a huge variety in all of them for sure. Having a nanny in your home is going to be the next least stressful if it's the stress thing that you're focused on. But for me, between like an in-home care and a daycare center, I don't have any. Those seem the same to me. Find somebody who you feel good about.
Sure.
And that's just like, look for warmth, you know?
Yeah.
And I have a cool list that I'm going to read you guys of like some ways to check on quality of care centers. Preschool, ideally, is going to be a little bit more focused on, I would have said structure before. A lot of them are going to have a little bit more structure to the day, but there also are like purely play-based centers, which don't like, they don't have much of a structured schedule, but the environment is set up for children to, has very intentional learning goals inside of the environment.
Okay.
So these are the kinds of options that there are. I just today, like literal today in real life, we put out a bonus episode about someone asked, is preschool important? And I went through all the reasons why, like, no. And if you want these things, then maybe.
Sure.
Things like what I just described, if you're a person who doesn't have a huge community that either your child can be around other children or that you can be around other parents or see other children to know what children are like or have expert adults that you can ask questions to. Like if those kinds of things are missing from your life, preschool can be really supportive in that way. And daycare or even like an in-home care center could also hit some of those things where there's like this person who is trained, who you can ask questions to. I really think being able to see other children is really beneficial, especially for new or young parents who just don't know what's normal for a 2 or a 3-year-old. And so then when we see the more volatile side of children, they can be like, why is my kid this crazy? And if you're not seeing others, then you think that they're the crazy one.
Uniquely crazy one. Yeah, that's right.
If you have a child who's like ravenous for either social interaction or just information, and you're like, I can't provide this. This is too much for me to like satisfy how hungry you are for one or both of these things. Mm-hmm. Not really happening with the nanny. I don't really see that in this like daycare or this home center. These are just more places to kind of like be and be loved. Then preschool might be like, oh, here's a really huge positive. So those are some of the categories I would give for like how to think about what kind of a space to be. Obviously, in what I'm describing, there's an assumption of a little bit of privilege in that you have all these options in your area and that you have the opportunity financially to like be choosing.
Sure.
But those are the kinds of childcare categories that we look at.
Totally. I know. And it's tough times right now. So I hear from a lot of families that it's like, well, I would love to send my child somewhere, but that will take my whole income or my partner's whole income. Mm-hmm. So one of us is going to watch the child.
Yeah. Or we live in a small town and there are only a couple of options.
That's right.
And they're not great.
That's right. Or what I told you today of like, there's some really great preschools in this particular area, but the waiting list, people have to put their baby on the list as a baby, but they're not going to go there until they're like 2 or 3.
Right.
So like, there's so many factors in this that feel tricky, but that was a great description of the options that you have. Are you familiar at all with Head Start programs?
I know that they exist.
Is that like, well, I don't know if you know, is it like that's a low income thing available in different states or?
I think it's publicly funded.
Publicly funded.
It might be California. I don't know if Head Start is national.
Okay. I don't know much about it either, but that's what we use.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know if you knew anything, like if it, that would probably count as the preschool side. So maybe it would have more licensing. Anyway.
Yes. Cool. Yes. Head Starts are preschools. And so there is some level of structure to them.
Cool.
And like academic-ish stuff. I do want to say, I'm glad you brought that part up because I also think there's going to be a huge variation county to county about like how much funding goes to Head Starts or like in you, it's just a place that you're going to want to feel out individual centers.
Okay.
It's not like there's like a totally evenness all the way across the board. People feel like they need to put their children in preschool sometimes for the academics.
Got it.
And that is not real past a certain point.
Okay.
So children who attend pre-K, so also a lot of data about like daycares and preschools are based on 4-year-olds.
Interesting.
And the age differences matter a super ton.
Okay.
So like you can't take your 1-year-old to a Head Start program, right? Like it has to be.
This particular one, they wouldn't let us start till three years old.
I think that makes a lot of sense. So usually preschool is 3-year-olds, usually pre-K is 4 or 5-year-olds.
Okay.
Children who have attended preschool sometimes see some academic benefits out the gate. Like they do better in kindergarten
okay.
or second and third grade. By the end of elementary school and certainly by junior high school, those gains have dissipated. Everyone else has caught up to that. So these are very temporary. Like I've practiced the schoolness and memorized some things. So in this early part of school, I'm doing technically better. Mm. But long term, there is no proven academic outcome that's like beneficial children who go to preschool. So there should be no pressure on you to be like,
it takes the guilt away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that my kid is with this nanny. She's the best, but I guess they should have to go to preschool in order to practice. Like, not real.
Yeah. I lived that because COVID happened while Eloise was in preschool and then she fully didn't go to kindergarten.
Oh yeah.
Like we didn't sign her up for Zoom kindergarten because I had just had Jules and didn't have the capacity to like have her sit in front of a screen.
Yeah.
But then, so we were wondering how she's going to do when she starts school for the first time as a first grader. So going from little girl to then starting that. And she really did great. And we were like, oh, cool. Because we didn't do much at home to be like academic, you know, I didn't, my brain wasn't even there. So that's kind of, I don't know, reassuring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My opinion.
Yeah.
On the educator side is that I don't think there's any reason for children to need to practice school before they go to school. Mm. I don't think you need to be doing workbooks. I don't even think they need to learn the alphabet. Like they don't need any of that stuff. Okay. Some of them love it and it's fun.
Yeah.
But the thing of like, well, next year you're going to have to be able to sit down for long periods of time. So now we should make you sit down for long periods of time. I'm like, oh, you're just like stealing the four-year-old life away from the four-year-old because later they're going to have to do this bummer thing of sitting down for a long time.
That's a great way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. We talked about this at some point recently, but the best readiness for school is a child who's like physically really developed, confident in talking to people and feels really creative and is able to raise their hand. All of these like very social. And when I say raise their hand, I mean like they have a question. So they ask it.
They use their voice.
Not like they've practiced waiting until they know how to do that. Yeah. I mean like someone who's like, no, I don't understand that. What does that mean? Wait, what are you saying? Mm. And is able to like be really present. Mm. And you learn all these things through play and exploration and interaction. Mm. I don't think you need to practice the roteness of school at all if you don't want to. I don't think it necessarily hurts anybody, but it's not a thing that needs to be pressed. Also, age and time spent in daycare has a really huge, when you do look at data, like it makes a really huge difference. Mm. So a one-year-old who's spending time, a lot of time in daycare, it's going to be like a little bit trickier for them than a four-year-old who's spending time in daycare and a child who's spending 2 or 3 or 4 hours versus a child who's spending 6 or 7 hours past the like 6 hour mark, it's a little tough. And I don't want that to come crashing down on you if you're a person who works a 7 hour day and your child is in a care center. Like that is okay. But in terms of like just laying some markers, the impact is more if you're very young.
Just counting on my fingers.
Or if there's a huge number of hours. And what that means is that if your child is very little and or is there for a very long time, then when they come home and when you're with them, they're just going to need a little bit of support in different ways, right? They're going to need maybe a little bit more nurture. They're going to need maybe a little more unwind time. Mm. They might come home with like a little bit more agitation and you may find somebody who's like a little grumpy and just needs a lot of space to be grumpy and drink cold water and roll around on the floor and just get looked at by you, you know, just knowing like, I got to figure out a way to provide a little more of what this child needs if they needed to not have it in this particular way for a little bit. Like it's all okay.
And enough sleep. This is like coming from me and Sean.
Yeah.
Our real lived experience lately has been we've like allowed bedtime to drift later, not really thinking about it. It's just been like, oh, everybody's playing. Now we're reading. Oh, now we're all yelling at the same time. Everyone calm down, you know? And then last night we were like, no. This is now getting like everybody's whiny and bedtime's way harder.
Yeah.
We're going to move bedtime significantly earlier and see. And bedtime was so much more peaceful. Wow. Everybody did so much better. We got group reading time in. It was like, and then we talked this morning, kind of debriefed. Me and Sean was like, that was really important. And it's the temptation because they're away is like, let's just draw out whatever time is there and not pay too much attention to like when exactly they go.
Mm-hmm.
And man, they already are living a big, long day.
Yeah.
And they need the sleep, just like we need the sleep.
That makes a ton of
sense. And it was affecting, it was shortening our time awake without any kids awake, because we wake up to these kids super early in the day. Mm-hmm. And then if they're kind of staying up later, then our windows are smaller. Anyway, yeah. It was just a thing.
That brings up two things in my mind. One being like, if your child is in the circumstance where it is going to be a little higher stress, mm-hmm. the thing that we do to take care of stress is like really hone in on taking care of the body.
That's great.
Right? Like we make sure that there's a lot of like good sensory input of like squeezing and touching and getting all those feelings out via like big play and, yeah, just like a lot that's in that body there, soothing things and expressive things. And then also like really a lot of protein and like quality fats, good amounts of water, like making sure that there's just like, so like if your kid has not slept well and is going to school all day and what they're taking with them is like white bread that has sugar jelly and sugar peanut butter in it, all they have for the day is like sugar with not a ton of sleep and this really long day, you're going to have somebody who's unhappy at the end of the day. It's not going to feel good. So we need to make sure that like, if you are doing the thing where you're going to be out all day and it is going to be a little bit more taxing, we got to make sure that we get you as like beefed up as possible in all the things that make you feel good. Good connection, good food, a lot of good input in the body, maybe some exercise that's like what you got to choose to do, child. And then, getting some good sleep in there.
It's so human.
Those restorative things.
Lane, it's so human. It's the same stuff we would tell the mom who feels overstimulated.
If you're working
or the
a
dad
long day,
who's,
make sure you get fuel.
Okay, nourish your body. Take care of yourself. Give yourself time to choose what you do, not someone else choosing it for you. This is so good. And that's actually helpful with my kids because I have wondered about the protein thing too. And it's a great point. You take care of the simple basics and everything will flow a little better.
Yep. And then you look for some quality connection time. If they've been away from you for a long time, make sure the connection is a little bit more high quality.
Oh, and what you made me think of. So Wilson, guys, he's like a cuddly guy anyway, but now at night he insists on each of us doing this thing where we like, he calls it a huggy and a kissy and a squish. And he wants us like on him a lot. And he's like, I want the kisses like everywhere. He's got a very, like it's a whole system.
Cool.
And, but for you to say that thing about like, they need the sensory, and he's also the most, I would say just like sensitive, the most prone to stress.
Sure.
Yeah. Than the others. So that's cool to realize that there's actually something to what they're saying. It's not just they're trying to draw out bedtime. It's really some, I mean, that's some of it is.
It comes back to the, we take them seriously, not necessarily literally.
Yeah, that's right.
Also, there's just a side note on that that might take us down a different direction. But like when your child comes home with stories from preschool, again, we're taking them seriously, but not necessarily literally. They do not have a narrative style memory. So that's why you go to Disneyland and then they tell you for 2 years that they went to Disneyland two weeks ago.
Every story for Wilson is a long week ago.
Yes.
A long week ago we went to Disneyland.
Yeah.
Is a year ago.
So, you know, a kid comes home and she's like, this person called me stupid and I'm the only person who gets called stupid at preschool. She doesn't know if she's the only person who gets called stupid at preschool. She's three. Also, maybe that happened one time and she's just remembering it.
Right.
So we're taking seriously her experience.
Yeah.
And we're just going to like work through the feeling of that and talk through this thing that she keeps bringing up.
Sure.
But I don't, as the parent, come to the teacher and be like, my kid gets called stupid every day and she's the only one, which is a thing that happens. And I'm like, nuh-uh, because I'm here
Because I'm right there. Yeah.
And I remember that. It was a big deal. And we talked about it.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it's still a big deal to her. And I'm glad to know that it's still a big deal to her. No, she doesn't get called stupid every day.
A better approach would maybe be, my daughter said this. Could you help me understand what she might be talking about? And the teacher goes, oh my gosh, I actually forgot that happened. It was such a small thing, but good to know it's not
small
to her.
Glad to know that it's meaningful to her.
Right.
And it just doesn't matter what the like specific physicality of what happened was.
Sure.
Feels like a big deal to her. We just emotionally deal
with
it together.
Figure that out. Yeah.
So same with these things of like, I need you to squeeze and kiss and touch my whole body. You read there's like a level of like, oh, it sounds sounds like what you need is sensory interaction. Mm-hmm. I've heard people talk about this with like nutrition during pregnancy as well, of like, oh, I have this craving. What I need might just be a lot of chips, but also like, I might just need salt. Mm. Like my brain is trying to send me a message of like, oh, I desperately need a cheeseburger. Right. Probably if I had really high quality protein, this craving would subside.
Yeah,
so it's the same kind of thing with little kids. They're telling you with whatever words or however it's feeling to them, what he needs is you to be like, he needs to feel his body against your body so that he knows, oh, I have a body. I can feel the edges of it because it's getting crushed.
Uh-huh. You know? That's right. I love that.
Being able to like try and see the need under the expression.
Mm-hmm.
They need something.
And they're asking and they're for trying to so many out. Things at once. They're like, I have a cut where I can't remember, but I know it's here and I need a cream and I need a Band-Aid. And I'm like, no, you don't.
What I need is for you to like, look really closely at me and touch my body.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's good.
Absolutely. Cool. Let's do this. I think we're probably coming to the end of how long we want this to get, but let me just read through this list of things. Now, I got this list from a very cool DJ in Los Angeles. Her DJ name is So Super Sam.
Okay.
Her name is Samantha Duenas, I think. And she's just this cool girl on Instagram, and she does this newsletter about her experience of parenting her child. So it's not like, this is how you parent. It's like, I'm somebody who's like hyper organized.
Sure.
And I research things in this interesting way. And she's just kind of like, I like the way she thinks. So I try to take a lot of stuff in.
Cool.
She made the best daycare assessment question there that I've ever seen in my whole entire life. Now, again, you don't need all of these things to be answered like in the best way in order for your child to be like safe and good and happy.
Okay.
But like cool stuff to think about. I'm just going to throw it out there for you guys to be like, these are the kinds of things I'm going to be looking for if what we're doing is putting our kid in a center. Nice. And we have some options.
Yeah, right.
Or noticing I'm going to a place where I see some gaps here. Mm. I'm going to make sure that
I talk to somebody about it,
see if we can advocate, or that I just take care of this thing in other ways at other times.
Cool.
Things to ask about. Admissions. Is there an application process? What's the waitlist situation? Because again, we live in an area where there's the opposite problem of there are a billion options, but there are millions and millions of people.
Oh yeah.
So like some people live in spaces where the population's low, so there's only a couple of options.
Yeah.
We have the inverse of that. Curriculum. Does this daycare follow a particular child development philosophy? Montessori, Waldorf, Reggio Emilia, etc. What is your philosophy on correction, discipline, conflict resolution?
Oh, I should ask that.
I'll just send you this list.
Like taking notes.
What is the philosophy on tantrums and big feelings? Operations and communication. What are your hours? What days are you closed? Do you offer makeup days? Is there a strict drop-off time? Are there late pickup fees? Do you allow last-minute drop-ins? How do you communicate with or update parents? Is there camera access? Do you send texts? Is there a blog that we look at? Is there a place where you upload photos? Is there an app? Do I have access to the teacher? Do I need to talk directly to the director?
Mm.
Okay, health and safety. How is the facility regulated? Are there regular licensing inspections and health inspections? Also, that should be posted on a bulletin board somewhere. You should be able to see when the last one was, at least if you're in California. How often do they clean the classroom and the toys? What's the emergency procedure and how often do they practice this? How do people get access to the buildings and the outdoor play areas? Any adult should be able to tell you.
Yeah.
Any adult that you see should be able to tell you like where every single access point is. That's something that I would make sure that that's the case.
Yeah.
What is the COVID protocol for staff and children? What's the sickness protocol for kids and teachers? Classroom, what is the curriculum, the daily schedule? How often do the kids play inside versus outside? In any climate, you want to be able to see more outside play. Like the more time that children spend outdoors, even if they live in a place that's snowy and they have to like really bundle up, it's just best for kids to be able to be spending some good time outside if you can. Is screen time part of the day? Which is very surprising to me that that is part of the day in a lot of places.
But that's a good question. You never know now.
You never know. And I guess there was like a period of time in our day at my school where it was right after nap time. We had a bunch of different nap rooms because it was kind of a big school. So all the kids would get up from their nap room and then get delivered to this one room where there was like a very short show on. It was usually Daniel Tiger.
Love
something
Daniel
really Tiger. Educational like that. At least like calming, peaceful, where like everybody gets snack as soon as they wake up, and mm-hmm. a lot of kids get picked up from there, and then cool. The rest of the teachers get to like clean up. So there was this very practical like one moment
yeah.
where it was a very helpful transition for kids, but there should not be a lot of screens yeah, happening at the place right. where you're paying to send your child. Where was I? Oh, what is the student-to-teacher ratio? So this is a big one. Anywhere you're deciding to send your child, if you have the opportunity, I would make a decision on this mm-hmm. if it's like between two different places mm-hmm. and the student ratio, student-to-teacher ratio is lower, meaning there are more adults and fewer children. Mm-hmm. Like that's one of the number one things that indicates quality of care.
Cool. That makes sense.
What's the age range in the class? Sometimes a mixed age group class is really beneficial mm-hmm. because older kids get to like experience part of like bringing younger kids along, and younger kids get to like see some more mature behavior. Mm. But sometimes that needs to be done in a really intentional way. You want to know, like, we do this on purpose mm-hmm. because we have a plan for having this group together versus like, we actually don't have enough teachers, so we just like push everyone together.
Right.
So just like knowing like what's the range here.
That's good.
A lot of times if you have a smaller age range, you can be a lot more precise. Mm-hmm. So to me, if there are very little kids, I like it to be a smaller age range mm-hmm. versus like 2.5-year-olds to 4-year-olds. Like that's sure. kind of fun to have all together.
Yeah.
But it's just something to find out like what is it and why.
Okay.
What's provided versus what do you need to bring? Mm-hmm. Diapers, blankets, water bottle, snacks, wipes. What's the meal program? What's the nap schedule? And what are the sleeping conditions? How often are diapers checked? Mm-hmm. Does the school assist with potty training? A lot of places require your child to be potty trained before they get mm-hmm. there.
One question I encouraged my sister to ask when she was concerned about something with the napping
yeah.
is, what do you guys do if they don't nap? What mm-hmm. if they try to nap and they don't sleep? Just mm-hmm. ask what they do.
Yeah.
It's helpful.
Yep.
Often they do nap. It's kind of surprising, but mm-hmm. just it's a concern for sure.
Sometimes kids nap way better at school yeah. because it's just like, it's very scheduled. They're in a dark room. Mm-hmm. All the conditions are perfect. It's what everyone's doing.
Yeah, other kids are doing
There's no opportunity to do anything else. It's mm-hmm. not like they get out of bed and my mom is here with yeah, all my toys.
Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, find out what the day is going to be like mm-hmm. and what the responses are mm-hmm. to all the kinds of different things. Because like we said earlier, they are going to be away from you. So knowing yeah. as much as you can generally mm-hmm. about what their day is going to be like is going to help you make a choice and help you feel confident
yeah.
when you're not there. What's your approach to cleanliness for children? Mm-hmm. Washing hands, removing shoes inside, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then teachers. What qualifications are needed to be a teacher at this facility? There are minimum qualifications state by state, mm-hmm. but then a lot of places require more educational okay. training. So just knowing like, what's your philosophy about that and why?
Yeah.
For the record, I'm actually someone who doesn't have like a huge amount of qualifications over the minimum because I think that school, like going to school for me personally sucks. It's bad for mm-hmm. me. So like mm-hmm. I'm someone who like my school didn't require a ton of additional education, but I am educating myself really constantly. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's not like a red line.
Sure.
But it's like find out.
Yeah.
Find out what they do. Find out why. Find out yeah. what these teachers are like yeah. and
well, and there is a certain measurement that people in the world use. I know because my friend was trying to get a visa into America and he didn't have a college degree, but he had been working for 10 years doing the same work.
Yeah.
And they equated it to a degree.
Cool.
So if you're talking to someone and they have years of experience yeah. in early childhood related things, running a preschool or doing, you know, maybe a home daycare situation, they might be exceptional at what mm-hmm. they do and not have an education yeah. from a college mm-hmm. in that. So yeah, it's worth
qualified
finding out.
In a much yeah, more yeah. real way.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah. I love that. What is your teacher turnover versus teacher tenure? Are the teachers happy? Do they feel supported by their team, by the parents, by the community? Finding out if the adults in the space are happy and like being there is mm-hmm. going to really give you a good idea of like, is this a happy, good place to be? Like, do people stay here?
Yeah.
What are the reasons that teachers leave? How often is there turnover? Do teachers ever leave mid-year? Mm-hmm. Do you have like, is this going to be the person who's with my child for this whole time right. that they're here? That's a big one. How many adults are going to be here and do the adults typically stick around a little
right,
bit.
Right. That's smart.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's just like, I felt like that was a really fun rundown, helpful. Yeah,
I
just
need like, that list. I realize. So I don't know most of those things about the school.
Yeah.
Sean probably knows a lot more because he got them enrolled there, but I also wouldn't be surprised if he was like, forgot, didn't mm-hmm. think to ask it.
Totally. You get there, you look around, also, you're like, I don't know, seems yeah, good.
Some schools are really great about like sending photos throughout the day or something. Like I have a lot of friends in schools. Mm-hmm. They're probably quite expensive schools yeah. that are sending a lot of photo updates. And if your school isn't doing that, then it would bring a lot of peace to know all of these things. Mm-hmm. And if they're sending photos, I don't know how to find them. I don't know where they're sending. So preschool, if you're listening, yeah. do I need to get these questions answered? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I might call them after I leave here, actually. Like, these are great questions.
Yeah, I'll send cool. it over.
Great. Good luck, you guys.
So how do you feel? Do you feel like there's any gaps in what we've left? Any important?
No, I think all of this is super helpful. And I mean, also, if you have specific questions about your own situation, feel free to write in and mm-hmm. we'll either answer based on what we know or do the crowdsourcing thing, or yeah. you can join a call and talk to other moms about mm-hmm. it. We lead Zoom calls within Very Good Mothers Club once a month, and they're great, and you yeah. can join. But what I love about this approach, which is similar to how I feel about other episodes that we've done with experts on things, is that the things you're saying are very encouraging in the way of like, you do what's best for your family, mm-hmm. but if there's gaps, you as a family fill them in mm-hmm. certain ways. And yeah. I think that that is much more doable than trying to just face the data and then do a little freak out inside mm-hmm. yourself of like, oh my gosh, I can't do it exactly the yeah. way someone out there thinks mm-hmm. would be the better thing for my children.
Yeah. And let me leave you guys with this. There's a man named Dan Siegel who wrote a book called The Whole Brain Child. And he talks a lot about how what children need is not a perfect experience of their life. What they need is for a loving adult to help them build a coherent narrative around their experience. And that's kind of it. You can actually go through a lot of things that are like not preferable. Mm. You can go through some really gnarly things in life. In fact, if you need to,
yeah.
if there's an adult helping you make sense of what's happening in your life.
Yeah.
So I just put this out there. If you are a person who's hearing this being like, I do not have access to the thing that I think would be good for my kid.
Yeah.
It is okay to go through things that are hard mm-hmm. if an adult is there to help you make sense of them.
Yeah.
So also, for adults, mm-hmm. wrapping a coherent narrative around what you're going through is the thing that's going to emotionally carry you through the thing that's hard. Right. So if this is a topic that's hard for you, like hear the story that's being told mm-hmm. here, which is you do the best that you can,
yeah.
you be with your kid, you support them in these other ways, and mm-hmm. it's going to be okay.
That's
like
right.
that is the actual truth, mm-hmm. literally based on data.
Yeah, that's so good. Two things that come to mind for that is one, we have this amazing mom who's in our community. If you join our Zoom calls, you'll meet her. I won't say her name, but you'll meet her. And she's in Montreal. And she talked about recently taking her child to preschool. And this little one is, I think, hasn't been there that long, or maybe the little sibling hasn't been there that long. Anyway, right after school, the little one had a little injury, very small. But when the mom brought it up, his reaction was very unusual, like mm. cried, kind of just seemed very off.
Yeah.
And she didn't go back into the school to ask about it. And when she was on the call talking to us about it, they ended up like, we followed up with her for a time and they figured out everything was yeah. fine. But her advice kind of to the other moms and what she said she wished she did is she wishes she took him right out of the car seat and mm-hmm. walked right back inside
yeah.
and said, something unusual just happened. He responded really weird about this. Could you help me?
Yeah.
And she didn't. And then it made it harder for her the next few days. But I just thought that was good too, because when you're talking about a coherent narrative, mm-hmm. for you, you're trying to comfort your little ones as they process the day's stress.
Yeah.
And if there's ever something that goes on that you're like, but I don't actually know what happened here. In this case, she really trusts the caregivers, but she really didn't know what was going on. And yeah. it kind of was a turmoil for her. So going in, building relationship with these people who are taking care of your kids is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I was thinking is Silvia in Barcelona, who I talked to you about, that's how we pronounce her name because that is her actual name, but I'm out of practice saying it. I just was WhatsApping her recently. And the only reason why I bring that up is because Eloise is 8. She started with this woman when she was 2. And we still have a relationship, and I haven't lived in Barcelona for years. And so there's also this piece that, like, if you're going to expand who loves your children, this network of people who loves on them, you might actually end up with like a really special treasure of a relationship with that person who's caring for your kids. When Eloise and Sean went back to Spain last year on a visit, they went and saw her, and she had a gift for her, and it was very sweet. And Eloise still speaks Spanish, thank goodness. And so, like, they could still have a relationship. And if I had not done that, even though I desperately needed the help, I would have missed out on so much, and Eloise would have too. So when you assess within yourself and within your family and your needs what you're going to do, be ready to receive somebody really wonderful into your life who's going to help love on your children. It could be Elaine. How lucky. That would be so cool, really. And I think my takeaway this week is that I really don't know these people watching my kids, and I don't know all the answers to these. And I do think COVID changed the way administrations or like schools communicate with parents. Like, there's a very separate approach, even with Eloise's elementary school, which I've loved the experience there, but it's not super easy. Like, you don't just like walk in and speak with someone. Everything is quite distanced.
You're not snuggling. I feel like a lot of my preschool life was holding moms.
You know, for real.
That's, I would like take the child, pass the child to an aide, and then hold the mom.
Absolutely. My experience in Spain was very much like there was such warmth. There was like, I could go into the place and sit. And in this school, like, parents wait outside for the kids to come, and you drop off outside, and it's all very, but it's shaped by COVID. It wasn't that like that sense. And so, so this conversation is also valuable for me to realize, like, well, what is the thing I need from these people in order to really feel sure that these are the right ones to be watching the kids? And so I'm going to go and bring these questions and get them answered.
Amazing.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, you guys are great. Thanks for being with us. We like you so much. Anything else we should say?
No. See you soon.
See you soon. Okay, bye.